And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, July 12, 2023. Some Sudanese Americans say it's difficult to send money to their stranded relatives across towns in Sudan.
It's very challenging. So we send help financially, so through money transfers.
And some South Sudanese politicians say the country's chief justice has shown his true colors.
He went to the wall not because he is a member of the SPLM. He went to the wall as part of the delegation of President Salva Kiir.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go live to London, where the United Kingdom on Wednesday imposed sanctions on 6 businesses belonging to Sudan Armed Forces and paramilitary rapid support forces in an attempt to block the flow of money into the current fighting between the two military factions. For a closer look at this, we have Oliver Windrich in London, who is a senior advisor at the Sentry, and he just put out a statement welcoming the move. Oliver, it's nice to have you on this show.
Great to talk to you, John.
The United Kingdom has imposed sanctions on businesses allegedly fueling conflict in Sudan. What do you know about these companies?
Well, what we know from our investigations at the Sentry is that the companies, both RSF and Sudanese Armed Forces companies, are the front and sometimes the back end as well for the financing of the conflict in Sudan. Both RSF and SAF have enormous corporate structures that help fund the conflict. And so these 6 companies are what is, I hope, the start of significant financial tools of pressure being imposed on both parties.
This move a similar move was also done by the U.S. government more than a month ago when it sanctioned companies belonging to both warring parties. How effective are these sanctions if you look at it without regional cooperation from countries where the immediate interests of these generals are?
It's a very good question, John. I mean, these sanctions and the U.S. sanctions last month will prevent these businesses and any associated businesses that are controlled or run by these entities from accessing the U.S. dollar or the British pound. So we will see an immediate freezing of any assets that are held in the U.S. or in the U.K. by these businesses. But as you say, this action is only as good as the action that follows. What's required will be additional sanctions and additional work within the region to ensure that these sanctions bite.
As we talk about this development, the Sudanese people want the guns silenced. And it's not the time now for, half measures that have not worked well in the past. I mean, this is according to some Sudanese who just spoke to us when this news broke out. They're saying sanctions have not helped any government in Sudan to respond to the needs or to respond to the calls from the West. What more should be done to stop this violence that has killed thousands of people and displaced millions?
I think that what we're looking at now is hopefully the start of concerted, coordinated efforts by the international community and regional partners to actually target the financing behind this conflict. What these sanctions do is they begin to kick off the corporate networks, the corporate structures that are fueling both the RSF and the Sudanese armed forces. And so it's not a silver bullet. It's not the only answer to the conflict. But what we're hoping is that by these sanctions and further targeted network sanctions, on individuals and, in this case, companies, we can begin to strangle the financing behind the conflict. But like you say, John, this is only one element of what needs to be a comprehensive regional and international move towards the end of this conflict and bringing these warring parties to the negotiating table.
Oliver Wintridge, thank you very much for joining us on this live broadcast.
Thank you, John. Pleasure.
That was Oliver Wintridge with Sentry, and he just put out a statement welcoming a move by the United Kingdom to impose sanctions on six businesses belonging to the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces in an attempt to block the flow of money into the current fighting in Sudan. An analyst and president of the U.S. Educated Sudanese Association says many Sudanese Americans are frustrated as they try to send money to their relatives who are stranded in towns of Sudan due to a collapsed banking system across the country. Samaha Salma says the situation in Sudan is dire, with families losing their loved ones to preventable diseases like malaria, typhoid, and others.
It's very challenging. So we send help financially, so through money transfers. The money transfer system is very erratic because it's basically an electronic banking system. It's a mobile money system. And so what's happened is that the central bank in Khartoum has been bombed. And so the systems, the central bank systems right now have reverted to manual systems. So it's one of the main banks of Khartoum that has a mobile money app that people used to use on a daily basis. It's on and off. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work. So sometimes people are able to send money. It's a very complicated system. So for example, here you're in Washington, D.C. You send money to a relative, for example, in the Gulf states. That person, because of course you can't send money directly from the U.S. to Sudan.
Yeah, because of the sanctions.
The legacy of sanctions. So the sanctions were lifted in 2017. But the banking system still doesn't like to deal with Sudan because it's too risky, because there were so many penalties and fines over the years that they're still reluctant to do business with Sudan. So you have a relative, let's say you have a cousin or a second cousin in Dubai, and then they're able to make a transfer to another relative's bank in Medini, for example, outside Khartoum. And then, you know, you have to search for a bank that's actually accepting transfers, because not all of the banks are accepting transfers. And then that relative is making transfers to individuals inside of Sudan, again, using the mobile money system. It's a very difficult process, and it's a very haphazard process. It doesn't always work.
This conflict is personal. It's personal to most Sudanese. They think the two leaders ought to have sat down and resolved their differences. There are even people who are saying if they want to continue fighting, let them take it away from Khartoum.
Well, I say don't fight anywhere. I mean, why is one human life worth more than another human life? Why is it more legitimate to have a war in Darfur than a war in Khartoum, for example? I think what we need is a complete cessation of hostilities. War is war at the end of the day. War is destruction. War is killing. War is suffering. And I think those people who say take it outside of Khartoum, I think I understand to some extent their reasoning. They're saying that this is the center of the country where the main institutions are. There's maybe a tiny bit of logic there, but I absolutely don't agree with it. I think at the end of the day, war is senseless wherever it is. And I think when you say things like that, you make the mistake of pushing the war out of the visibility of the center of the country, where the main media is. And this is what we've seen in Darfur. We're now seeing a repetition of the ethnic cleansing in Darfur that happened exactly 20 years ago. And one of the reasons that it took so much effort to get attention, to get the light shined on the ethnic cleansing and the genocide in Darfur between 2003 and 2005, is because it was so far outside of Khartoum. It was almost as if it was in a different country. Because it's literally, Sudan is the third largest country in Africa. It's such a large country. And the infrastructure is so poor that you don't have a lot of movement between. It's a big deal to move from Khartoum to a place like Jenena in West Darfur. That's a very long trip, and the infrastructure is very poor, and there are a lot of security issues. In order for a country to be stable, to develop economically, for people to be able to have a life of dignity in a country, you need to have an end to war, essentially. I mean, that's really what needs to happen.
That's analyst and president of the U.S. Educated Sudanese Association. She spoke with me here in Washington on Tuesday. Delegates from Libya, Chad, Central African Republic, South Sudan, Ethiopia, and Eritrea are expected to attend a summit in Egypt to discuss how to end the 12-week conflict in Sudan between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. Joseph Stigler, director for research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam, Egypt has a strong incentive to restore stability in Sudan.
More and more of these people are now coming into Cairo and being very much a part of daily life there. And so it's front and center for Egyptians. They're feeling the impact economically and in terms of trying to provide some sort of humanitarian assistance. I think Egypt also quite clearly recognizes that a destabilized Sudan on its southern border is quite a security risk for Egypt, and it provides an opportunity for external actors to gain a foothold and threaten Egypt in other ways.
That is true, but isn't Egypt seen as an ally to the Sudanese army, and isn't that a problem going forward, or is it with this summit?
Well, the government under President Sisi and Egypt has all along favored a continuation of a military government in Sudan. This is consistent with what Egypt itself has done and how Sisi himself has come to power. And he, you know, has an affinity with the military actors. And he clearly doesn't want to see democracy get established in Sudan, as this would create a precedent and some expectation that Egypt itself would democratize. So it's a fair point, but I think given the possible scenario of a fragmented, protracted conflict in Sudan that could spin out of control in a lot of different ways, you know, that is far more threatening immediately to Egypt. And so I think we have to take at face value that it's a genuine attempt by the Egyptians to move things forward.
What about these two fighting sides, the Sudanese army and the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces? Now, as the weeks have gone on and, you know, the atrocities have been committed, it sounds like, with the reports that have gone to Human Rights Watch and others are reporting, civilians are blaming the RSF for rape and those kinds of atrocities more so, not that they're alone, but more so than the army. Have you heard any reports like that?
The reports we get from Sudan, of course, are very fragmented, given the difficulty of reporting, and all sides are alleged to be involved in violations against civilians. That said, yes, the RSF comes in for special notoriety for looting, for human rights abuses, and other sorts of extrajudicial actions against civilians. And we've seen this especially in Darfur in the last few weeks, especially it has ramped up. The Arab militias affiliated with the RSF have, you know, dropped any pretense that this is a military conflict and have really gone after African populations in Western Darfur, especially the Masalit Pash population, you know, seizing land, taking property, and extorting civilians on the road. And so they're really seeing.
That's Joseph Segley, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies here in Washington. He spoke with VOA's Carol Van Dam. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, or SPLM-IO, and a group known as the other political parties are calling on South Sudan's Chief Justice, Rech Modut Chan, to resign. SPLM-IO Director for Information says the Chief Justice has shown some bias towards one signatory of the 2018 peace agreement. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
A photo of Chief Justice Chanrej Madut at a political rally organized by President Salva Kiir's ruling party, the Sudan's People Liberation Movement, or SPLM, in Wau has been making rounds on the social media. The photo has sparked loud reactions from some of the parties that signed the 2018 peace agreement. Pogbot Balwang is the director of information at the Sudan's People's Liberation Movement in Opposition, or SPLMIO, a group loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar. Balwang says by attending President Kiir endorsement rally in Western Bahrel Ghazali State a week ago, Chief Justice Chanrej Madut has shown his true political color.
In the event, if there was any disagreement between the parties when the election is conducted, how could he resolve or make a verdict on this matter while he's biased because he's supporting one party? So we believe in such positions, we need someone who's neutral. The easy thing is for him to resign from that position because he has exposed his true colors that he's not neutral.
The 2018 revitalized peace agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan has some components on judicial reforms in the country ahead of elections. Balwang says those judicial reforms should start with the removal of Chief Justice Chanrej Madut from office.
We will call for the president to, you know, replace him with another member, a South Sudanese member, who is neutral and who will ensure that he will remain neutral as that position required. Reform has no, you know, starting point. We're calling for, you know, reform in the whole system.
Peter Mayen Majungdit, Member of Parliament and chairman of a group known as Other Political Parties, says Kenya's recent contested elections has some lessons for South Sudanese politicians.
The judiciary must be independent, not only just from political affairs, but even from the executive itself. And if the interference of judiciary have went to an extent into political affairs, then that raises a question. And we have seen how Kenya made really great progress through judiciary. Kenya judiciary has proved to the world that democracy can be attained through judiciary.
VOA contacted Chief Justice Madut for comment on the allegations of his biasness toward President Kiir's party, but he declined to comment on record. Kwal Atimbol is the SPLM Secretary for Parliamentary and Executive Caucuses. Bol admitted that Chief Justice Chanrej Madut attended President Kiir's rally in Wau 1 week ago.
He went to Wau not because he is a member of the SPLM. He went to Wau as part of the delegation of President Salva Kiir. Anybody can attend that, including the other political parties. They were there also. For you to attend any ceremony or you call it occasion does not mean that you are now a member of that particular party.
South Sudan is scheduled to hold its first general elections in December 2024. Last week, the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan said the country's leaders are yet to create a conducive political and security environment necessary for conducting elections. For VOA News, I am Manyang David Mayor in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, eight cattle raiders in Unity State will not see their families for 3 years. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A traditional court in Mayom County of Unity State sentenced eight people to 3 years in jail for their involvement in cattle raiding. The suspected raiders were accused of causing insecurity that jeopardized peace in Warap and Unity States. The County Commissioner of Mayom says the eight people have been raiding hundreds of cattle in Warap and Unity. For VOA News, Leech Nyak Jok reports from Bantu.
The authority in Warab State say at least 7 people were killed and 7 others injured in a Tweed County after a Ahmed young man suspected of coming from Unity State attacked Aweng Payam earlier this month and stole cattle. Warab State Governor Manyambol Malek has asked his counterpart in Unity State to trace the whereabouts of the suspect. John Bolmaya, the commissioner of Unity State, Ayom County, described the raiders who have been charged for 3 years as criminal. He added that they should pay the law for stealing 78 cattle from where in Tony County of Warab State. He said the suspect raiders have formed a group between Unity and Warab State to exchange his stolen cattle in a different place.
The people who have been arrested are not from Riak. There is Payam known as Wankech, which is one person. Kwerboni Payam has one person. Biech Payam has 3 people. Wangbor Payam has one person. Mankien Payam has one person. Riak has 3 people. And Rialthiang has one person. These are mixed up Payams in Mayom.
He said the 8 suspects are a resident of Mayom County and have been raiding cattle from Dinka and Lawnwir, who have a cattle camp near Unity State border, with Warab.
The court at Riak in Mayom County has charged each and every person with 3 years in prison, and they'll be referred to the prison in the state capital.
Commissioner Bull say arrested 35 raiders who were also charged in the traditional court are currently in prison in the state capital, Bentiu. He say the cattle wrestlers also stole cattle from Misiria, Bulnwir, and Dinka. The police spokesperson in Unity State, David Matutbo, say cattle raiding is rampant in the area. He say his office is not aware of any recent arrest of cattle raiders in Mayom County.
I don't have any information about that.
The suspected raiders were arrested last week Sunday. Warab and Unity State have experienced a regular cattle raid causing insecurity and revenge killing among communities in Warab and Unity State. The cattle raiding has been a driver of intercommunal violence in many counties and states across South Sudan. For BA News, I'm Liel Nyaja in Bentiu, Unity State.
From Bentiu, we go to Juba, where the outgoing head of the delegation of the International Committee of the Red Cross in South Sudan says humanitarian operations in the country is costly due to lack of access to some areas in the remote parts of South Sudan. Pierre Dobis questions South Sudanese against heavy dependence on humanitarian aid. For VOA News, Wake Simon Udu reports from Juba.
Pierre Dob says inadequate infrastructure remains one of the biggest humanitarian challenges facing ICRC in South Sudan.
It remains a very challenging environment due to the remoteness of many areas where people are in need. You have entire areas that are not accessible during the rainy season by road, by truck. So it forces us to operate also with fleets of planes and helicopters, which makes the operation extremely costly.
Dob says there is decrease in armed conflicts in South Sudan due to the implementation of the peace agreement, while the humanitarian situation remains dire with millions of South Sudanese in need of support. He says an intracommunal violence continue to remain one of the biggest challenges affecting humanitarian operations across the country.
It is quite difficult to work with such kind of situations, because when civilians are fighting other civilians, you don't necessarily have a clear leadership in the people who are fighting. You don't necessarily have a clear chain of command. So it makes our protection work much more complicated.
Dob also calls on South Sudan government to abide by some international humanitarian laws.
The Geneva Conventions are very clear. They put some rules to be respected by armed forces, by security forces, respect the civilian population, to treat properly the people detained in relation with armed conflict, to provide medical care to the wounded and the sick, and to protect the medical facilities.
Major General Lulroy Kwong, the spokesperson for the South Sudan People's Defense Forces, says the National Army is addressing the issue of communal violence and are making progress in deploying the unified forces across parts of the country. Kwong admits there are challenges hindering security service delivery in some parts of the country. He says dispatching quick response forces to hotspots in some remote parts of South Sudan can be very difficult.
The physical infrastructure, a lack of roads to some parts of the country do not allow security forces to intervene in a timely manner. Secondly, we are emerging from war, and the country is not entirely in the control of the National Army and other security organs. We have had some insecurity being experienced in areas under the control of different factions, especially SPLIO.
Dope leaves South Sudan after serving as ICRC head of delegation. He says Sudan is his next destination where he will lead ICRC operations. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Udo reporting from Juba.
Still in Juba, the International Organization for Migration says it needs over $190 million for supporting internally displaced persons, returnees, host communities, and migrants in South Sudan. IOM says South Sudan continues to face serious humanitarian conditions due to violence, conflict, climate shocks, resulting in extraordinary floodings and drought in some parts of the country. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng reports from Juba.
The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, has appealed for $190.5 million to meet the needs of internally displaced persons, returnees, host community, and migrants in South Sudan. Asahar Mohammed is the head of operations with the IOM in South Sudan. Mohammed says IOM needs the fund for core services like health, water, sanitation, and hygiene response, in addition to provision of mental health and psychosocial support.
We have complex issues that are in South Sudan. We have ongoing, already existing displacement, which are in need of humanitarian assistance across South Sudan. On top of it, we have drought, we have flooding.
Mohammed says IOM's humanitarian response will focus on social cohesion for returnees, internally displaced, and host communities to achieve sustainable peace in South Sudan. Mohammed says in addition to the already dire humanitarian situation, the outbreak of fighting in Sudan on 15th of April 2023 has resulted in an influx of people fleeing the country to neighboring countries, including South Sudan.
There is an urgent humanitarian response to deal with the returnees, and they need onward transportation assist. For that, $26 million is required. It is part of our both humanitarian response, transition and recovery programming, durable solution and resilience building for the people of South Sudan.
Albino Akol Atak is South Sudan's humanitarian minister. Atak admits the country is witnessing a serious unfolding humanitarian crisis. He says the South Sudan government has approved $5.3 million for responding to the humanitarian situation in the country.
The Minister of Humanitarian Affairs is now using this money mainly to transport the returnees to their final destination. Well, that we have been doing for the last 3 months.
Last month, the government of South Sudan approved $5 million for IOM to support its humanitarian programs in the country. Atak says the country's humanitarian needs are growing daily.
As the government of South Sudan, we are commending what the IOM is doing, and we are appealing to the international donors to continue supporting IOM to transport our returnees to their various destination, as what the government now is doing.
According to IOM, more than 4 million people are displaced in South Sudan, with 2.5 million internally displaced and 2.2 million as refugees in neighboring countries. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Juba.
The That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Cornelius, we wish you a good evening.